All right, welcome everyone to our Sunday evening Building Zion conference call. Tonight we're going to read a few quotes from back in the 1800s, mid-1800s. The subject for tonight is economic unity. As I was going through all these 500 quotes plus quotes that I found about building Zion or establishing Zion, this is one of the subcategories or categories that the quotes fell into. I've got about 35 quotes that fell into this category that had something to do with economic unity and how they valued it. Actually, I want to switch gears on this and jump to the end. I usually start it with the earlier quotes and read to the later ones. This quote is by George Q. Cannon. The more I've read his quotes, the more I've believed that he was the one that wrote the 1877 letter called a Encyclical on Cooperation. That it was a First Presidency letter that all the First Presidency and the 12 Apostles signed it. But like I say, the more I read these quotes about Zion by George Q. Cannon, the more I'm convinced that he's the one that wrote it. Or at least he digested it so well that he could share some of the same ideas in other places and other times, that it was pretty persuasive. Anyway, so this is a long quote. It's from October General Conference, 1882.
Just for a sec, make sure everybody mutes their phone while you're talking right now.
Fine.
Okay? And then we can unmute later when we want to discuss.
Fine. I think that's, what is that function? Oh, you'd have to do it on your phone, huh?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thanks, Joyce. So, 1882. That condition is upon us. The growth. So this quote sounds a lot like that letter. The growth of wealth in the hands of a few individuals threatening us with greater danger today than anything that can be done by outsiders. I know that this is true. God does not design to have a people of this kind. He does not design that there shall be classes among us, one class lifted up above another, one class separated from the rest of the people with diverse interests. Interests that are not strictly in accord with those of the masses of the people. Because when this is the case, there is a lack of union. Men are more disposed to compromise principle who have great moneyed interests at stake. In fact, it is a characteristic of human nature that, as a class, this class is a compromising class. Their temptation is to yield principle, to yield ground, and it cannot be helped from the very nature of things because of their circumstances. God designs in the organization of his kingdom on earth to prevent this. If it is not prevented, then the Zion of God is not established. Is anyone injured by its prevention? No. The time must come when the talent of men of business shall be used for the benefit of this whole people, just as the talent of the 12 apostles and that of the leading elders of this church. As their talent is used for the benefit of Zion, so must the talent of men who are gifted with business capacity be used in like manner, not for individual benefit alone, not for individual aggrandizement alone, but for the benefit of the whole people, to uplift the masses, to rescue them from their poverty. That is one of the objects in establishing Zion. And anything short of that, as I have said, is not Zion. It is not the Zion that the prophets have foreseen. It is not that which God has promised. Boy, you can't get much clearer than that. In a nutshell, he's saying, we can't have rich and poor and have Zion. We can't have some people in a higher class because they have money and others poor. It just doesn't work. Which is interesting. It's kind of an interesting criticism or observation of our current society in the United States right now over the past, I don't know, since the Great Recession started. My understanding is that the super wealthy are getting even wealthier and the middle class is getting pushed down into the lower class. So we're seeing the consequence, the long-term consequences of a division in classes, economic division. Now, you know, the young kids in the universities who voted for Bernie Sanders would tell you, no offense, Andrea, if you're listening, would tell you that, yeah, we need socialism to even this out so we don't have super rich and super poor. Well, obviously, as we've been taught 100 times over in church, the difference between socialism and what the Lord wants to accomplish is free will. You can't force people to be equal. You lose all the benefit if you try to do that. Besides, no human society has ever achieved that other than a Zion society because their motives are always... usually someone gets in charge whose motive is power, gain, or glory, and they ruin it for everyone else. Anyway, that's a fascinating quote. Let me go back to the beginning here. Here's a quote by Brigham Young. This was way back in 1860, so they had only been in the valley, what, 11 years? Wait, 12 years. I can't subtract. It's close to that. But do not set your hearts on your buildings, for I would rather have you remain in your wagons and dugouts than do that. We have to learn how to build up Zion and realize when it is built that it is not ours until it is given to us by our Father as our eternal habitation. In other words, we don't really even own anything until we receive it as a stewardship from God. Let's see. Now, I haven't really grouped these quotes very well, so they kind of jump around, but they all have to do with economic unity. Here's another one by Brigham just 2 years later, 1862. Let us be thankful for what we have in possession and use it exclusively for the building up of the kingdom of God, the establishment of Zion, and the triumph of righteousness and truth. Let every penny, every dollar, every sum of money, large or small, be devoted to this all-absorbing interest and also every moment of our time. So I guess he doesn't think we should spend any time working in Babylon, for Babylon. And yet we all do. These quotes really just, shake up our worldview that all is well in Zion and somehow we're just going to coast into the millennium and Jesus will come and it will be, oh, look, Jesus is here. Cool. But... clearly, there's some serious differences between where we're at and where we need to be by the time Christ comes. And nowhere is it more stark than in this category of economic unity. We have none. There is none. And very, very little among the church members. What's it called? It was based on the program of helping bring people to the valley, which was disbanded by the U.S. government in the 1880s. But
was it the Perpetual Immigration Fund?
Right, and they kind of resurrected it for college kids.
Right, so now it's the Perpetual Education Fund.
Right, so that's probably the closest thing we have to any kind of economic unity. Among the saints. And I suppose you could argue that fast offerings is a form of that. But as you read some of these quotes, the kind of economic unity they talk about is way past what we're doing. Here's one. 1870, Brigham Young. The Lord wants us to build up his Zion, and he wants to build it up through you and me. We are the ones he has called upon. Will we consent to do this? I firmly believe that before we make any very effectual progress in the accomplishment of that work, we must become more united and fervent in our faith and practice than we have ever yet been at any time. We have to become more like a single family and be one, that we may be the Lord's, and not everyone have his own individual interest. This is destructive. This disconnects the feelings of the people one from another and causes divisions and disunion. Reminds me of the Book of Mormon, where they're always having dissensions and conflict. But when we make the general cause of Zion our individual cause, it brings us closer together. So this is under the subcategory of unity. Economic unity is a must. Here's another one, Wilford Woodruff, 1870. We are the only people under heaven who are one, and we are not half as much one as we ought to be. We have to improve. We are the only people in this whole Christian world who make any pretensions to oneness and building up the Zion of God on the earth. We profess to be one in the gospel. And we have to become so in temporal matters. We have to become of one heart and one mind in giving attention and obedience to the counsel of God in all things, both spiritual and temporal. Zion has got to advance. She has got to rise and shine and put on her beautiful garments. She is advancing and has been from the time of the organization of the church, and she will continue to do so until the winding up scene. Apparently he wasn't speaking as a prophet at that point, because the movement to build Zion got shut down in the 1880s, just within two decades of his statement. But he makes the point very powerfully that, yeah, we're one, or we profess to be one in regards to the gospel, and yet we must also become one in temporal matters. And again, if you haven't heard some of the earlier recordings, when the early saints never used the word economic like we use today, when we say it's an economic issue, to us that means it has to do with the buying and selling, or the provision of goods and services provision of goods and services. And they use the word temporal instead of the word economic like we use today. So when he says we have to become so in temporal matters, he's meaning economic matters. And we are so far from that that it makes me wonder, okay, is there going to have to be a huge upheaval between here and there for us to have to rely on each other for survival, in order to force us to become united? I hope that's not the case. I hope we can build some things up front that might be helpful. In fact, is this the one? Yeah, I love this quote. This is a Brigham Young quote, 1872. And there's so much here in this quote. I just love it. I love his attitude. Anyway, suppose we should say to a few of the Latter-day Saints, if we could find those who would answer the purpose, quote, how would you like to build up a stake of Zion, a little city of Enoch? How would you like this? Would you like to enter into a covenant and into bonds according to the law of the land, and let us bind ourselves together to go into a, quote, system, this is his word, systematic cooperative system, not only in merchandising, but in farming and all mechanical work and in every trade and business there is. In other words, every economic effort would be involved in this systematic cooperative system. And we will classify the business throughout, and we will gather together a few hundred families and commence and keep the law of God and preserve ourselves in purity. How would the Latter-day Saints like it? Do you think there could be any found who would be willing to do this? Let me say to you, my brethren, I have a very fine place to start such a society as this that would probably sustain from 5 to 10,000 persons. I would like to make a deed of this property to such a society and enter into a covenant with men of God and women of God that would go to and show the world and show the Latter-day Saints how to build up a city of Zion and how to increase intelligence among the people, how to walk circumspectly before our God and before one another and classify every branch of labor, taking advantage of every improvement and of all the learning in the world, and direct the labor of men and women and see what it would produce. Follow it out for 10 years and then look at the result. I love that attitude. Let's do an experiment. Let's try it and see what happens and show the Latter-day Saints how to do it. That's just a remarkable attitude he has. And I share that attitude. Why not? Why not try it? Love that quote. George Albert Smith, 1873. A unity must exist. The Latter-day Saints must love one another. They must cease to worship this world's goods. They must lay a foundation to build up Zion and to be one, in order that they may be prepared for the great day that shall burn as an oven. Well, let's see. John Taylor. Gosh, John Taylor was awesome. I'm liking him more and more. The more of his quotes I read, it's like, I like this guy. 1875. So this is, what, 2 years before Brigham Young passed away. We cannot build up a Zion unless we are in possession of the spirit of Zion and the light and intelligence that flow from God and under the direction of the priesthood, the living oracles of God, to lead us in the path of life. We do not know them without, and we need all these helps to lead us along, that by and by we may come to such a unity in our temporal and our spiritual affairs and in everything that pertains to our interest and happiness in this world and in the world to come, that we may be prepared to enter Zion here upon the earth, help to build temples of the Lord and to administer in them, and so operate and cooperate with the gods in the eternal worlds and with the patriarchs, the prophets and apostles and men of God who were inspired by the spirit of revelation in generations that are past and gone. We want to be one with them, one with God, and one with each other. For Jesus said, except ye are one, ye are not mine. Gosh, he's so powerful. He's awesome. John Taylor. He should be prophet. Okay, here's another one from him, 1878. We talk about being a good people. Well, we are when compared with the rest of the world. But we ought to be 20 times better than we are today. And if we, as Latter-day Saints, were to strictly observe the Sabbath day and pay our tithes and offerings and meet our engagements and be less worldly-minded, be united in temporal and spiritual things, Zion would arise and shine, and the glory of the Lord would rest upon her. And it would not be long before all the nations would call us blessed. That same year, in fact, the next month, John Taylor makes the point that we can't avoid economic unity if we want to have Zion. Now, I'll mention some things. So this is John Taylor, 1878. Now I will mention some things here that my attention has been called to in regards to union and union of effort. We have had a great deal said about the United Order and about our becoming one And some people would wish, oh, how they would wish that they could get around that principle if they could. But you Latter-day Saints, you cannot get around it. You cannot dig around it. It will rise before you in every step you take, for God is determined to carry out his purposes and to build up his Zion. And those who will not walk into line, he will move out of the way, and no place will be found for them in Israel. Hear it, you Latter-day Saints, for I say unto you in the name of Israel's God that it is a revelation from the Most High, and you cannot get around it. Talking about economic unity. And then here's a George Buchanan quote saying the same thing as that first one I read, but in a much shorter way, 1882. So actually that was the same conference, probably the same talk. Let's see. Here's another John Taylor, 1877. Looks like I moved it out of the time frame, so this must be a real good one. 1877. Oh, wait a second. October 6th. I think that's his first talk after Brigham Young died. Let me double check that real quick on Wikipedia. August 29th, October. So yeah, this was his first general conference talk after Brigham Young passed away, John Taylor. The feeling that was manifested here yesterday is most credible to Israel. It is approved by the gods in the eternal worlds. And if we carry out in our practice and daily lives that union which we manifested in our voting, in other words, our sustaining votes, the Lord God will pour out upon us his blessing until we shall be united in all things, temporal and spiritual, which unity we have got to come to. When this is achieved, Zion will arise and shine, and then the glory of our God will rest upon her. Then his power will be made manifest in our midst. So we have to achieve the unity before Christ's power, God's power, will be manifest in our midst. Ready, go. So how do we do that? Oh, I've got to share this quote. This is kind of an add-on. Apostle Melvin J. Ballard in 1919. This is the only quote from the beginning when these talks were recorded, which was 1840-something, 9, I think, through, I think, 1930-something. There's only one time where the word capitalism was ever used in conference. And this is Melvin J. Ballard in 1919. Sometimes it has been charged that the church rather favors capitalism. I have never discovered it. Should repeat that in the elders' quorum or high priest group and see what kind of reception it gets.
It's short and sweet and to the point.
Yeah. The thing is the capitalism, the reason why this quote is important is that the capitalism we think we believe in is not the capitalism they're talking about. The guy who coined the term capitalism was Karl Marx. You may have heard of him. To him, capitalism was the division of labor into those who have capital and those who don't. So those who have capital hire those who don't to do their work for them, and then the capitalist, guy with the money, keeps the difference. That's what we're used to. People today, though, if you talk to your next-door neighbor who's a Mormon and say, hey, tell me what capitalism is, he'll say, well, it's the free market. It's free enterprise. Kind of. That's like saying that, in the South, everything, every soda pop is a Coke. Hey, do you want a Coke? Yeah. What kind? Yeah. 7-Up. Right? Mm. So capitalism is a form of, a method of organizing capital and labor. It's one way of doing it in a free market society. There's gobs of other ways that it can be done. And there aren't just two ways. Most of the people I discussed capitalism with think that if you don't believe in hardcore capitalism, then you must be a socialist. No. Just because I don't drink Pepsi doesn't mean I hate, or doesn't mean I like Coke. Okay? I don't drink either of those. Anyway, so, okay, I distracted myself. So the economic unity is impossible in a capitalist, in a capitalist society. Well, you can't achieve it. If you have some people who are the owners and others are the employees, they are on unequal levels, unequal classes. You have a working class and you have the owner class. Therefore, based on all these quotes we've read, capitalism is not the Lord's plan for his people. Period. End of story. Free enterprise is wonderful. And in a free enterprise, so you got to think of free enterprise as the playing field, like down at your local high school. You can play soccer on that field. You can play football on that field. You could play grass hockey, I suppose. You could play cricket. Gosh, there's gobs of things. You could play tag. Hide and seek would be tough. But there are gobs of games you can play. Man, that hurts. There are gobs of games you can play on a field. Well, free market, a free market economy is, a free market is the playing field. And we can play capitalism on it. We can play socialism on it. We can play communism on it. We can play cooperative free enterprise. We can set up what Brigham called for, which was a systematic cooperative system, which is what the Basques did in northern Spain. They had their own everything, their own banks, their own retirement program, their own hospitals. They employ something like 72,000 people in worker-owned cooperatives. So they all own. They're all owners. Everyone who works there is an owner. There isn't multiple classes of people. All right, I think I've blabbered enough. Any thoughts, Joyce, Mark?
No. Sorry. It's all good stuff, though.
Okay, so how do we do it today? Since Brigham isn't offering us land to try
out.
I
would think just head in the direction we know. You know, at least start creating some money, you know, create a checking account, so to speak, so that we can start putting money in there or sell things and start saving up money so we can start working on assets that we're going to need, like land or a water pump or things like that, things that we know that we're going to need.
Yeah. Yeah, and being the philosopher I am, I always wonder, okay, so we're going to operate within Babylon to get out of Babylon.
Yep, I believe that's probably a necessary step.
I have to ask myself, is that the only way out? And I'm open to the possibility it is the only way out.
I mean, no. You know, could you just say, I'm selling everything that I've got and I'm going to go out and live in San Pete County? Yeah, you could do that. You know, take whatever equity you've got from your house and go try and buy some land and try and start building some shelter for your family to live in.
Yeah.
But, you know, for everybody really wanting to be out of Babylon, you know, I think we need a system in place, which means You know, you have to find stuff that you could market, that you could sell, that you would give the proceeds to the Zion group. And then, you know,
I just answered my own question with what I've been blabbering here a few minutes ago, and based on what you just said, it just occurred to me. The free market society is not Babylon. It's the capitalism part of that society. So we can build the Brigham City network of cooperatives was based, or its foundation was the free market economy.
Right.
So that brings me back again to following that model, since it was the most successful model, probably, of all the models followed by the early saints.
Right.
It makes sense to go back that direction and start where they kind of left off. And we've talked about doing that through setting up a marketing website to sell products.
We could ask somebody who wants to market, say, hey, everybody bring whatever that you're donating to Zion over to, you know, my house or Jesse's house, and then we'll put it on KSL or Craigslist and try and sell it. You know? So it doesn't have to look a certain way, that you've got to create your own product, you've got to sell it, you've got to turn it into cash and then give the cash, you know, to Zion. So, you know, yeah. Other ways to make it work.
Yeah, I can't get over the feeling that there's something that needs to be done first before we start selling products. An operating agreement or something along those lines. It says, here's what we're doing. Here's how we're going to operate, which you would have if you incorporated as a, like an LLC, where each member of the LLC is an owner,
right,
and on the board. And an operating agreement would include those kinds of things.
Right.
How we're going to function, who's going to be in charge of keeping track of the finances. I have to admit, that is not my skill. That's not my strength.
Not your 10 acres.
That is definitely not my strength. I catch up my books once or twice a year, whether they need it or not.
Right.
And I don't enjoy it.
I've got a Utah standard 2-page operating agreement that, you know, to open up a typical LLC, that's what you need. So,
oh, wonderful.
I have one of those, at least, you know, we could start with that and add to it.
Yeah, why don't you post it in the co-op group?
Okay.
And we'll all take a look at it and tweak it to make it fit if it doesn't already.
Right.
I think the LLC is going to be the best, just out of the different types of corporations I've dealt with, an S corp and a C corp, and definitely don't want to be a sole proprietor.
Would you explain what LLC stands for those of us who don't know?
Sure, it's a limited liability corporation.
Oh, it's LLC is what you're saying. Okay.
Right.
What did you think I was saying?
LOC is what it says.
Oh, yeah, that's a cleanser from Amway.
The difference of an LLC versus like a C corporation is, well, one would be expense because you would pay an attorney $2,000 to $10,000 to manage your corporation, but in an LLC, we're handling it through the members. So, you know, certain members will hold certain positions, and then they're pretty much running it. And so even if you're involved in an attorney, it would be $200 to $500 one time a year at our annual meeting. And, so it would be a corporate attorney. So,
yeah, and with
the benefit is it limits the liability. That's why it's actually called a limited liability corporation. So we're setting up a corporation, but we're setting it up so that everybody's members, and so nobody can be pinpointed out and say, well, I'm going to sue this Zion LLC, I'm going to sue Jesse personally and Mark personally and Andrea personally, and so it kind of wouldn't stand a chance in a court because, you know, that was why we set up an LLC, and so we all have limited liability, and unless they can prove fraud or, you know, somebody stole money out of an account or used it for personal purposes, you know, then they have no case. So,
you mean we can't pay for our daughter's wedding out of the foundation that we set
no,
up?
No, but I'll give you some jelly money.
Oh, dear.
There's some
okay,
buttermilk.
Cool. Yeah, that definitely needs to be done.
So, and the cost is $60 to set one up in Utah. And so it's just a matter of trip of going downtown Salt Lake, dropping off the papers, giving them to them. They'll date time stamp them, and, you know, 5 minutes later you walk out the door with an LLC. Then you can take those papers to a bank and open up a checking account or a checking and savings account, and they'll accept those papers, you know, that the LLC has been formed, you know. Something we probably should decide right away is officer positions, like, you know, who's the managing member, which, you know, in English means who's kind of in charge of it, who's the manager who's in charge of it. Doesn't mean he makes all the decisions, doesn't even mean he makes 2% of the decisions, but he's the managing member. So if the LLC got sued, then he would be the one that would get served with the papers. You know, we ought to figure out, you know, who's the treasurer, who's the secretary, just standard corporate, you know, and then just, you know, we ought to set
and
up.
These are temporary hats.
Right.
That
yeah,
we would wear.
Notice, so.
And at this point, whoever has the best skills to cover that particular role would be in the place.
Right.
I think if we're going to build something really big and strong and enticing to lots of people, we'd want to replace ourselves with people who are a lot better at whatever hat we're wearing than we are.
As soon as we come across somebody
that has more experience.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. And then we can set up whatever we want, monthly meetings or quarterly meetings. You know, I wouldn't do monthly, but, you know, typical ones, you do them anywhere from annually to semi-annually to quarterly annually, which means every 3 months, every 6 months, or once a year. And the first year, I'd probably suggest every 3 months just because there's going to be a ton of questions and things come up that we're going to have to vote on and make decisions about. So, you know.
Well, the nice thing about meeting virtually is we could meet whenever.
Right.
And then there's a record there of everything that was said. You know, it would probably be good for whoever wants to participate and be a member of the co-op here at the beginning for us all to pitch in whatever $60 is divided by the number of people who want to participate.
Right.
And they
3 or 5 or whatever.
Well,
members.
But if you want to have a little left over to start the bank account too, though, and so I was thinking maybe if we each put in 20, then we would have 60 plus, and you put the extra, you know, go ahead and start
that. To open the bank account.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, and Barry Eaton says, I have any documentation for any type entity we decide to use. So
okay.
Sounds like we're good to go.
Okay.
Awesome.
Good. And I'm willing to take the papers down to Salt Lake and turn it in and make sure they do it right and make sure we get the paperwork back.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, cool.
Awesome. I go to Salt Lake usually once a week, so.
Okay, and once we, actually this is more exciting than I first realized. Once we have the members in place, then we can start talking about strategies, we can start talking about you know, how we're going to get from where we're at now and how we're what hurdles we have in our way, which are enormous.
Right.
And how we can use what skills and talents we have to address those hurdles and get past them.
Right.
And create something really awesome and long-term and amazing.
And you can, you know, we can, and you can make subgroups even within the LLC, like somebody's in charge of new members for the first 3 months to try and help them get started, you know, or do they need income to buy products so that they can, you know, create an income, you know, to sell. So,
which reminds me, in Utah, you have to be organized as a cooperative to use the word co-op or cooperative in your name.
Okay.
I think there's some connection between LLCs and co-ops. I think you can actually organize a co-op as an LLC and call it a co-op, and the state will let you call it a co-op. I believe that's the case, but somebody needs to check on that. Maybe Barry knows. I don't know. Anyway, we should look into that issue as well.
Okay.
Cool. Wow. We already made some progress.
Yep.
Yay.
Actionable steps. That's what it breaks down to.
So just for fun, and, you know, this drives my wife crazy, when I like to talk about stuff for fun, even though it may or may not happen, let's assume we're already organized as the co-op and as members, and now we say, okay, we want to end up creating an alternative to, well, I hate using this word because of, you know, capitalism, but an alternative economic system.
Right.
It would seem to me that all of the kids, young millennials who voted for Bernie Sanders, many of them could be persuaded to accept this kind of approach because their, my understanding at least, is their big thing was, you know, this economic, what do they call it? What's that term the progressives use to lure them in? Economic, where there's differences between the rich and the poor. What do they call that? Income inequality. That if we use the terms they're familiar with and say, look, we solved that here. And there's a chance we could get quite a bit of interest among the people who are dissatisfied with the status quo. And the young tend to be idealistic and open to new ideas and have lots more energy than we old people. I just got back from babysitting my grandkids. Oh, my gosh. I remember when we used to could do that kind of thing, chase kids. Anyway,
Barry had a comment. He said, I would suggest staying within natural law as opposed to statutory law.
We ought to discuss that on the co-op Facebook page.
Okay.
That's probably an important issue we need to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this call is probably not the place to do that, but that's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed. Cool. Thanks for bringing that up, Barry. So,
how many people would you say, Jesse, would be in the founding group? Are there five of us, or there's three of us? Is there 12 of
us? That's the thing, is in essence we're operating as a board of trade in reality, those of us who are involved in the creation of this particular co-op. the initial marketing co-op, and it's essentially the central co-op because all the other co-ops are going to be producing certain products that are sold through the central co-op. Yeah, that's a good point. Probably, we really ought to see ourselves as individuals wearing hats, and we put on a hat, we do that function, and we take it off and put on a different hat when our talents and skills are best suited for that different hat. We can't see this as the dear African souls who joined the LDS Church and they were from a tribe that you don't get released from a calling. They thought there was a bishop, I can't remember which country it was, but when the state president called him in to release him, he was massively offended because in his tribe, he would lose serious face. We can't have that kind of attitude. It's got to be, okay, what hat can I wear now? What can I do now to move the whole cause forward?
Right.
And then if a better hat comes along for you individually, we have to be willing to take it off and wear the better hat for us. So we probably restrict to answer your question, we probably restrict it to, I don't know, six. I don't have a number, but it would probably go along with the major section headings of, so you'd have somebody in charge of finance for the central co-op.
Treasure.
You know, however many of those different business functions, that's how many people we need to have. At least that many. So, you know, sales, accounting, let's see, the book E-Myth probably has a chart that shows all those. At least the old version did. The later it gets, the more my brain decides it wants to take a break. And I can't recall those. Oh, here we go. So, sales, advertising, service, facilities, production. Well, we won't be doing production per se, but we would have somebody in charge of development of external co-ops. So yeah, we'll need to look at a traditional org chart and figure out how to make it fit the central marketing co-op.
Right.
That sounds like another task for the co-op page. Cool. Gosh, we're just coming up with all sorts of good stuff. See, you get great minds together and sparks start flying.
Well, are we done already?
Can be.
So there's six of us. If we want to put together, how much did you say? Did you say $100, $200? I think it takes at least $100 to open a checking account. And the
LLC. Or they will charge you $4 or $5 a month if you don't have at least $100 in there.
Yeah, we ought to put it in a credit union.
A credit union
doesn't charge any monthly fees.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And I don't care, you know, I don't have any favoritism. I mean, go with America First Credit Union or America or Mountain America Credit Union.
We figure out who's, that's not necessarily true. Ideally, it would be the credit union that's got more locations, so whoever happens to be wearing the financial hat at the time would have easy access.
Right.
So there's a task right there. I assume University UCCU is the biggest credit union, but I don't know.
I am not familiar with those. I'm not familiar with credit unions at all, so.
They're cooperative banks, basically.
Yep.
Sort of. More so than traditional banks, that's for sure.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, it sounds like we're off and running. Next week's topic. Oh, wait. Next week is Thanksgiving, isn't it?
Yes, next Thanksgiving weekend. So, but it is Sunday night. It is the last day of the Thanksgiving weekend.
All right. Assuming we have the call next week, I really love this topic. It's these quotes all speak to the idea that there's no need to wait to build Zion. Basically, we have everything we need. I think it's awesome. Enjoy sharing those. All right. Well, why don't we? We got plenty to keep us busy. And why don't we call it a night and thank everyone for participation. And next year in the New Jerusalem.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, good night, everyone.
Good night.
All right, good night.